All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And have you ever thought about turning your love for camping, canoeing, and condos into a thriving real estate venture? Today, my guest, Colin Ballantyne, has an intriguing story from the picturesque Collinwood and Wasaga Beach area that challenges conventional rental assumptions. Colin, welcome to the show. Excited to explore your unconventional journey.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so let's jump in on that. How did you end up working in the Collinwood Wasaga Beach area?
Actually, we have family and a lot of friends up in the Collinwood area, and we were venturing up there quite a bit. And my wife and I have designs that eventually that's where we're going to go. We're going to head up there to retire. We love the outdoors, as your intro kind of alluded to. Canoeing outdoors, camping in the wilderness is kind of a big part of our lives. And we were up there and taking a look at things. And as we do as a couple, start going through and taking a look at properties and taking a look at prices. And this is way back about, 10 years or so. We're looking and saying, wait a second, there's some pretty attractive prices up here on properties. And we had a number of real estate investments down in Mississauga and Oakville and decided to look at focusing north. So we did, and then eventually decided to go more all in up in the Lower Simcoe, Georgian Bay area, and pulled the trigger on a few properties and did some burrs up there.
Nice, nice. So did you find it challenging to work a little bit off the beaten path?
Actually, no. It's an hour and a half away from where we live. We did a bit of a quirky thing where we have two travel trailers, actually. And for all of our projects that we've been working on, we install a 30-amp circuit on the house, take a trailer up, and connect it to the home. So when we've been working on properties, we have a place to eat, sleep, clean, work, do everything we want. We have a portable home with us to be there. So I would act a lot of times as, I could be on hand for a general contractor. So I would be able to work with all the trades that are coming in, and we have a place to stay and manage everything through that. And actually, we've even done it for like maybe tenant turnovers where maybe we haven't hired somebody out. Maybe we go do it ourselves. We could take the trailer up, plug it in, and be able to manage all that way.
Yeah, so you have like
so
a mobile office.
Bit of a different twist.
Yeah, I mean, there is, especially in that part of the country, you do have to drive pretty much everywhere to do anything. But to kind of simplify that is an interesting framework, just bring your office. Not everyone has that opportunity. Maybe they don't own that mobile office, the trailer or whatever. But yeah, interesting. So you guys do a lot of the work on the properties yourselves, or how does that work?
It's a mix. So depending on what it is, I mean, I am a bit of a Renaissance man. I do like working with my hands. I like doing a lot of things, but I also have to admit, where's the best, most efficient use of your time? There are things where really you probably shouldn't be doing it yourself. When we're into the bigger projects, I would be working with the trades, doing my mortgage business first. And then if an evening came in there and I was up, then I would jump in and do some work. We're doing some painting, we're doing the final prep work and things. But the real benefit is being on there when the different contractors are coming in and having a better relationship with them. Now, I've got so many great people that I work with. If something comes up, I can call my electrician, I can call the plumber, I can call my contractors. If anything goes wrong, they're there to be able to parachute and get things done. So establishing those relationships by being on site is a lot more beneficial than being just a remote worker that you're only sort of dialing it in. Now, again, smaller scale in terms of what I'm doing. So it was certainly more achievable in regards to managing a duplex conversion. If this was getting into a 12-plex or something, I guess, I don't think this would be a solution that would apply at all in that kind of a scenario. But in a smaller scale, it actually has been working quite well.
So do you find it beneficial or a disadvantage to be a mortgage broker and a real estate investor? Do they cross lines in a positive way?
Yeah, I would say they do. I think probably the worst thing about it is the temptation of the deals that do run across your desk. So you'll see things that'll come through and you're running numbers and you're like, oh man, I wish I had discovered this one. But I think one of the things I really like is I'm actually just completing a file right now with an investor who lives up in Northern Ontario, and he's on his fifth property, and
Mm-hmm.
he's going through and doing it. But I understand where he's at. I understand those specific requirements for the lending side and the investor side. So it's a nice bridge that comes in that I can help investors that when they are in that scaling up, to assemble their documents. Certainly the review and documentation side is a lot heavier. What they're looking at from their financing, how can they structure some of their debt? How can they roll certain credit lines or equipment needs or whatever they may have in to try and balance out their portfolio? So I do get to leverage a lot of my own experience within it. But like I said, it's actually my wife and I have a hobby that we're looking at places, and then the first thing we do is start running numbers on things. And yeah, there are times when it's like, ooh, I wish I could pull the trigger on this, or other times that your eyes are wide when you see how somebody's bought something. You're like, I have no idea how they made the numbers work. They must have shoved a lot of capital in, which to some people, hey, that works. But we always look at the minimum down and see what the returns are.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ways to finance things, but ultimately, it's to each their own, right? If it makes sense for someone, and we don't always understand how people are financing things. And that's one thing I learned early on in real estate. It's like, that's not a fact, and not everyone's financing things the same way you are, and we'll never understand. Maybe it's a tax deferral. Like, maybe it doesn't make any money. Like, there
Exactly.
could be a million reasons why people are doing things, but if there's value and someone sees it, then they're going to move on it. So it must give you some, because if you see these deals come across the table, you're like, okay, it must give you some positivity to be like, oh, these do exist. This person found one right here. I'm doing the underwriting for this deal right now. So do you ever have that happen where you're like, this is okay, I'm motivated again now that I saw this last deal come across my desk?
Oh, 100%. I had two deals this week. One, I'm just in the initial discussions with a woman who's they're up in Owen Sound, looking at the numbers for what she's doing, and I'm like, this is a sweetheart of a deal. It is a BRRRR project she's looking at, but the numbers work. Like it's actually a good position. And then, as I mentioned, this other one in Northern Ontario. It's funny, people don't consider when I'm talking Northern Ontario, I'm talking north of Thunder Bay. I'm talking like, way Northern Ontario. And not a lot of people look at it. And I probably wouldn't look at it myself. And this is a friend of mine from university way back, and he's running this great rental business and picking up. He got an off-market deal that he's going to be able to turn this around into a profitable investment within a month. So it's pretty amazing. Then you see these deals come through, and you can get very excited for these people when you're working with them. It's hard not to get excited when you find a really good deal and you can see somebody succeeding out of it.
So do you, I guess, people probably ask you this all the time is, how did you get started? What was your first venture into real estate, to kind of give people a background where you got started?
Yeah, I'd say there's actually sort of two starts. When my wife and I got married and we were looking for a home, we live in at Oakville, Ontario, and the area that we were in, we ended up looking at a new development, and the new development had the option to build a coach house. So we have a laneway house or coach house, and at the time it was 25K to build this 450 square foot apartment above our garage. Now, this was a few years ago now, plus
Yeah,
20,
things have changed.
and things have changed. So another friend of mine in the neighborhood just built one, and it cost him about $265,000 to build a 450 square foot apartment above his garage. So it was a great first step in, and it was a big convincing to chat with Jenny and say, I think we should do this. However, it was one of the smartest decisions that we ever made. And that was the first real foray into, I would say a soft entrance into real estate investing. Once we'd got our appetite, sort of our taste buds wet for that, then we started going through and looking into and expanding out a different kind of investment portfolio. And we ended up doing a condominium purchase, and we rented a condominium in, or not rented, we bought a condominium in Mississauga and rented it. Condominiums turned out to not really be our cup of tea. I didn't like the fact we couldn't fully control everything. You had a condo board that could make decisions, and they made some, if you think about it, remember they were doing contract rates for gas and electricity and everything. There was all this fear, everything going up. Yeah, lo and behold, the condominium board signed on these things, and we were beholden to them. So we decided to get out of that and then started getting into the single family homes. And in particular, at that point, it was we really wanted to get into duplexes and then started going from there and building out the portfolio.
Nice.
And then
So
it jumped down into burrs, the raised bungalow. I mean, it's nothing more exciting to me than a raised bungalow if you're getting into a duplex conversion because the basement doesn't feel like a basement.
yeah, if you've got the clearances, especially, if it's built 1940s, 1950s, 1960s and beyond, you usually have the clearances in the side door enough to have it really be a separate unit. Do you
Yeah,
still hold,
exactly.
you still holding on to that laneway property?
Yep, still got the laneway property, and it's been great. And we started off with students, and then that it's actually shifted. The tenant has shifted it to into young professionals and divorcees that are looking for a small spot to
Is
reestablish
it like a
themselves. So the
studio?
clientele has. Yeah, it's a studio. It's like a bachelor studio with a full bathroom, full hot water heater in it. So it's not a tiny compromised, but it is a bachelor. But the fact that it's detached from the house and above a garage means no shared walls. You have total privacy within it. You can be, watching a movie up there and crank the tunes up, and you don't disturb anybody. And that's a pretty sweet setup. I mean, I
Yeah,
certainly wish I
those,
would have had a place like that to rent when I was younger.
of course, yeah, those seem to be, especially with like the federal government looking for density, they are pushing that sort of density now. They're allowing a lot more of this stuff to occur, but like you said, it doesn't always make sense on paper. It doesn't make sense to actually build these things a lot of times. Did it make sense when you guys did it, or was it still kind of like where we're sinking some money into this thing?
At the time, not earning a lot of money, we were like, okay, this is going to push our budget a little bit. That being said, we sat down and you're crunching some numbers, looking at it, going, this would work.
Over time,
And lo and
yeah.
behold, I mean, yeah, over time, if somebody's paying half your mortgage every month for, 20 years, that is pretty incredible return on investment, right? So, the interesting thing now is going to be the federal government coming out with their Victory or Strawberry Home program again, reviving the World War II scenario and saying, okay, here's all these pre-formatted homes and approved houses and low-rise apartments and potentially ADUs and garden suites. So if that comes through and they are building them or the ability to build them as quick as they were previously, that would be an incredible impact because they were building those homes in as little as 36 hours because they were also
We have
pre-formatted and
piles and
pre-designed.
piles of them, piles of the strawberry box houses, and they're great houses. It's just, in hindsight, when we go to like f buy those and flip those here in the year 2023, really wish they would have put some basements on those because they're just on grade and they're beautiful houses. You just wish you could go downstairs, and some of them have been raised and they put a foundation under it, and it's a beautiful house. So if they do run, if they do get really excited about it and allow us to do that, hopefully the developers have a little bit more foresight and say, hey, let's put some sort of fun foundation. But that is the most expensive part, is really digging that thing out and putting that thing
Yeah,
on to
100%.
something. But I love that thing. They could run the exact same floor plan and people would buy those because they still sell so well against most houses. The 1.5 story strawberry box where they bring on the rail line and bolted together and you're done. There you go. There's your house. So I would love to see that revival happen as well. So with all the things that you're doing, we talked before the show. I said, are you raising capital? And you actually mentioned to me that you're now pivoting and looking at the opportunities to lend capital. Tell me how that came about.
Really, it's a management of time. We have a teenage daughter in the house and family time and running a business and running rentals. We were in the debate of, okay, there's a lot of multiplexes out there being able to pool in with that. That being said, I'm not opposed to potentially leading into doing a multiplex and doing some raising it that way. But it's certainly the multifamily, which I think has been a general trend for everybody recently because. Let's face it, the burr, single family, and even duplex have been hard numbers to run in this interest environment. So there has been a big shift in the market for people into that. And from a time efficiency and management perspective, being able to be a little bit more hands-off is certainly something that we've considered as a potential option to go through. And that might include with us doing private mortgages out.
Yeah, it's interesting because maybe you can give us your take on it. As a mortgage, as a mortgage agent, mortgage broker there, is it really that bad when you bring the numbers up for a single family? Like, I always look at it and I say, you're getting this property for maybe 20 or 30% less than you would have had it maybe 2 years ago. Let's say that it was a million and now you're getting it for, I don't know, 870 or 850 or something. It's come down a bit. Wouldn't you say to the person, hey, you might not be making any cash flow, but you've just saved yourself 100, 150,000, 250,000 off the thing. Carry the thing for maybe a year, maybe two. Take a short-term mortgage, like a 2 year or 3 year, and then it's going to make money. It's just not today. Is that kind of what went into your thought process as you decided to lend instead of joining in on that? I don't want to carry someone else. I don't want to pay for someone else to live there. That seems to be the stigma, is people don't want to pay for someone else to live in a property that they're renting out.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know if it was the wanting to take the loss or hit that was sort of twinging me to say, hey, let's not do this. It was more so our time management side of things. But certainly from a client's perspective, with clients I have spoken with, you are right. I mean, okay, we're in a higher interest rate environment, but housing prices have come down. If you find, and I would say you find a golden nugget right now that is turning cash, if you find it today, that is a gemstone. Like, run for that one, because as interest rates go down, it's going to turn into a cash cow. Now, they're not as prevalent, in the heyday at one point when houses were cheaper, you were finding them left, right, and center. And then when the market started going nuts, and people were overbidding and everything, that was completely different. Again, going back to our early part in the conversation, I don't know how some people were making the numbers work. You don't really know when you're blind and outside those transactions. Some people may be doing it as a tax cut, or write-off, or saying, hey, I'm going to play this in a longer play. But yeah, there's certainly, I am giving advice to people when they are looking and saying, this is the opportunity to go through and do it. In particular, first-time home buyers. It's the whole approach of, like, look, if you want to get into the market, the approach to getting into the market has shifted, and you really should be looking for a house with a secondary unit. You really should be looking at buying a house with friends or roommates and pooling that cash and house hacking. That is absolutely your best foot forward into the market, because you're going to take advantage of the housing prices now. You will benefit from an interest rate dropping. You've got your foot in that door, and you've got your first taste of real estate investing as well. I mean, it's a perfect combo for people. That I'm recommending that out to a lot of people that they do.
So with your the buy and hold portfolio that you have now, are you holding on to that thing? Are you going to start selling that? Are you going to start refinancing and lending? What did you guys ultimately decide to do?
We've stabilized our portfolio. We haven't had to go through. There's nothing that we've decided that we want to sell. We had, when everything was, COVID came and everything was in turmoil, it was always in the back of my mind. If we needed to do anything like that, we could. We've been fortunate enough in the way we had structured our debt that we have been stable and in the black still. So I know that's not been the case for everybody, and some people are, taking a shorter term hit and saying, okay, it's going to cost me a couple hundred dollars a month, but in the long term, this is going to pay off. So we, from our last BRRRR project that we had done, we had pulled capital out, do the typical pull the capital, shove it into the TFSA, sitting on that, and that would be the capital to launch into the next
The
project,
next one, yeah.
and just parked it, actually. And we're waiting for what's the next opportunity coming up. And this is the debate that we're going through, is like, hey, is it pooling in with others and going through to do that multiplex? There's certainly a lot of attraction in doing that. But on the flip side, it could be, instead of being the one coordinating that, could you be the one lending to it? So it's a two-way street, and we're in the middle of doing that evaluation on both of them, because both strategies are viable. Because clearly the market still has a lot of, multi-unit demand that's coming. And with some of these programs coming in, there's a great opportunity for money partners and for the aggregators.
Well, one thing, if you want my 2 cents or my advice is, if you decide to
Always love
lend,
getting advice.
yeah, if you decide to lend, one thing as someone who's been the one receiving these loans, at the end of the day, and I've seen this happen all the time, is if they don't do the job properly, it will end up becoming yours. You know, I've known people who've had to come in and take the property over, and you know, if they don't do the job properly, you end up becoming the GC anyhow. So I feel like a lending position, some people lend without knowing much about the actual underlying thing. But you as a lender, knowing if someone's doing a good job, I think would be really powerful. You know, that's stage five. If you can get to stage five in the pyramid of like finding deals, you know, getting them under contract, flipping property, making some money, buy and holding things, you've managed to make it to level four. Now, if you've got enough positioning to go to level five and start lending back down to the people that, you know, were your age when you started, that's the end game. So I would think about it seriously and say, look, let's move to the end game. We don't need more tenants and toilets. We need more
Yeah,
money in the
but
bank.
there's still tenants and toilets are very attractive.
Yeah. Someone's got to manage the tenants in the toilet. So if people want to connect with you, they want to find out more, they want you to put their mortgage together, how do they connect with you? What should they do? How do they find you?
I spend a lot of time on Instagram. So I'm the mortgage builder on Instagram, and you can find me at themortgagebuilder.ca, part of the Bricks Mortgage Group. And yeah, I'd love to connect there. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. And yeah, I'd love to connect. I love sharing ideas and networking with people because you gain so much from others and their experience. You'll never really know everything. And that's where like even the raising capital side of things, it's something I have not done and something I would like to like more about.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I hope people really got a lot out of the fact that, hey, you can invest outside of your main market, and a trailer doesn't hurt. You know, drag it out there and set up camp and get it done.
Yeah, it's a unique way to try and facilitate and take advantage of it. Plus, you can actually write off the camper as a business expense.
There you go. Leave it up to the mortgage broker to tell me about the write-offs. Perfect. Well, I appreciate it, Colin, and until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.